Big news story today concerning Honus Wagner. They found him alive. Well, that's not accurate. They auctioned off his card for another record amount of money. It's getting old. I think Gretzky should have hung on to the doggone thing. This thing has exchanged hands a few times. Most expensive baseball card in all of history. Considered America's Mona Lisa. That's what I read this morning. They said, wait a minute. They sold America's Mona Lisa. That's an American story. I'm on that. The legendary T206 Honus Wagner baseball trading card. 1909. Sold for a record $2.8 million. Finest known example of this card. Now, 6 months ago, it sold for $2.3 million. Well, that was a good investment. Guy bought it for $2.3, hung on to it for 6 months, sold it for $2.8. That's a profit! It's referred to as the Mona Lisa of baseball cards. I think it's America's Mona Lisa. I think if we had something we could put up behind glass in our museums to compete with what they have at the Louvre, we would put up Honus Wagner. I think that's America right there in so many ways. In so many ways, when you look at that Honus Wagner card, that real simple face, that simple painting, you're looking at what America answers with when Da Vinci throws out that crazy chick. The T206 baseball card features a youthful Wagner in his Pittsburgh Pirates uniform. This has always been the Holy Grail, said one card expert. This is it. This is the one everybody wants, but only a few can afford. Adding to its value is that only 50 to 60 Wagner cards are believed to exist, and none of the others in circulation are close to the quality of this one, which has been encased in protective sheeting for decades. Let's find out a little bit more about this card and about baseball collecting in general. David Hobson is with me. Hi, David.
How you doing, Bob?
You can call me Tim.
Okay, Tim, go ahead, yes.
Say, Dave, you're with what operation? You are in this as a lifetime career, right?
Hey, Tim, I think somebody actually maybe before named Bob Pascal. Anyway,
actually the guy before was named Tom.
Yeah, it is a full-time occupation, and it does real well.
It's a full-time occupation. And where are you? You're online only, or you also?
No. I have a store in Edina, Minnesota.
What's it called?
BaseballCardBuyer.com, Inc. So even though it has the web address, that's a little bit of a selling thing there as far as I'm registered with the state. Yeah, and I'm over there in Edina, and I've had actually over 300,000 people to my website looking to sell cards.
Is that a new trend, by the way, for storefront operations to have .com in their name?
You know what? I don't know, but it works for me.
Yeah. So you're able to make a living. You're raising a family on this money?
Yes, I am, actually. I got a Bambino or a Bambina. Hopefully a Bambino coming in about 6 weeks.
You're not going to reject it if it's a Bambina, are you?
All God's children are great.
Uh-huh. But you hopefully Bambino, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Boy, I'd hate to think someday if she's a little girl that she'd hear this recording. Pop was really hoping I'd be a boy.
Well, maybe she won't hear. I'll keep her away from the internet or whatever.
There's a terrible, terrible story in the news today about some Chinese parents. Did you see that, Speed?
I don't watch the media, so I didn't see any of it.
Oh. Did you see it, Dave?
No, you're talking to me? I didn't see anything. Hello? No?
You don't check out the media at all?
I don't, no.
Really? So you're one of these guys who just sort of immerses yourself in what you do and sort of has blinders on for the rest of the world.
Actually, I get a lot of information sent to me because I'm a journalist, so I don't have to so much survey it, so I write about it then.
Okay. Well, this baby's born in China, and it's a girl. Parents wanted a boy. So the parents insert, I believe, up to 25 needles under her skin. I don't know what on earth they were trying to have happen. It's a bizarre form of acupuncture. The needles literally just disappeared under the skin. Well, years later, she's an adult. She's wondering about this chronic pain. Well, she finds out she has all these needles. And right now, the big story online is they're removing each of these now, and it's a big, big operation.
It's barbaric.
Yeah. So keep the needles away.
No, I mean, the point is, obviously, something where an atheist, communistic nation like that can happen, things like that can happen, so that's absolutely a mortal sin.
Okay, back to baseball. Honus Wagner's $2.8 million card here, what do you know about it?
Yeah, that's always known as the card in collecting. I do get a lot of calls from people trying to sell the card, but it's they just have a reprint one of it, so you rarely ever see the original one, and that is the one that was at one time owned by the hockey superstar Wayne Gretzky, and it was graded by a company. It's a key factor, Tim, by a company called PSA, Professional Sport Authenticators, in Newport Beach, California. They've really brought the hobby back. In fact, I'll be heading out there on Tuesday to deliver a whole bunch of cards I just recently bought. I go out there about once a month.
When Gretzky bought it, he paid about $400,000 for it.
For him and McNally, right.
Why not just hang on to it?
And
I mean, tell me this. If 6 months ago it was 2.3 and now it's 2.8, then couldn't you just live off the money of the increasing value?
You know, it's interesting because the hobby's been super solid for probably about the last, since about 97. There was a downswing in the early 90s, but since about 97, it's been great. And it's been so stable, it has not been speculative, but I have noticed on my last trip out to PSA's headquarters, reading some material, et cetera, on my business, that there is some incredible prices that are coming on cards like it kind of used to be before. And that was kind of, that maybe hurt a little bit, but these are incredible prices. And a lot of my clientele, Tim, are actually CEOs and lawyers. What's the old saying? The only difference between men and boys is the price of their toys.
I see. Okay. the second most valuable card.
Second most valuable card would possibly be a high-grade Cracker Jack, like a Joe Jackson. It's a very incredible card there. I sold a very extremely rare card in an auction out east, if you want to hear about that real
quick.
Sure. Okay, that was actually, it's called the Josh Gibson rookie card. And it was a Negro League player, and there's only 13 of those known. Now, condition is everything in baseball cards, so that card I sold in a collection, as I said. There's one that had sold about a year before for $77,000. And he played in actually a Puerto Rican league, and there's only 13 of those cards out there. So Josh Gibson, he's kind of like the Babe Ruth of the Negro Leagues, and I came across that card. I bought it from a dealer, actually a private party out in New York City. So I travel to buy cards a lot.
Yeah, you know, I went to your website, and it said you'll get on a plane and go see a collection pretty much anywhere.
Yeah. I was just out in Portland on the 14th and bought a substantial collection out there. Exactly.
How much did that run you?
A bit over 30.
30 grand.
Yeah.
Did you have that on you?
Yeah. You know, anyway, it's done usually. I mean, it's a big time business. You know, I have a college educated guy, and I had a degree, and actually, I should say a license as far as the financial services and everything. And I left on good terms because it's a really great deal. It's I can take care of my family and not have to deal with the rat race.
Yeah. Were you ever just a kid on a Schwinn Stingray buying them at a five and dime?
Yeah, with those gear shifts that kind of hurt you as far as if you miss. I mean, like that.
Had a shifter on yours. We didn't.
Say, yeah, but I never put the cards in the spokes. That's why I guess I got a little bit of a better collection.
You know, that says a lot. You had these cards and you saw the kids putting them in the spokes and you said, "Hey guys, if you want to be plumbers the rest of your life, you just keep doing that." So you didn't, did you save any from your childhood?
Absolutely.
How much do you think you made just on what you saved from your childhood?
Probably the only card I could, I did some 73s. That's what I started collecting. I used to go to my grandma's house and go up to the little dime store, and boy, was that a dream and fun. And, You know, so I saved some of those, and the 73s, you know, I probably, you know, quadruple my money on those for sure, if not more.
Sure.
But without a doubt. But basically, I mean, I really got into it. In the early 80s, started buying a lot of collections, advertised in a lot of the local papers, et cetera, and saved up a lot of stuff, and it's a full-time thing. I'm a member of the Better Business Bureau and actually a Dun & Bradstreet listed company.
I collected in 70, 71, and 72. Those were my years. I still have my cards from back then. I've never gone to a dealer because I have a different relationship with baseball cards. the cards that are important to me are the cards that I bought as a kid. If I buy a card now, well, it's going to be a card I bought as an adult, and it's, you know, the whole thing is that I remember buying these cards as a kid. I remember collecting them, and so when I look at them and hold them, they're the ones that I actually went out and got when I was, you know, 8, 9 years old. But there's another way of looking at it, which is forget about nostalgia and the fact that you used to sit there on your Schwinn and go through them and that you can still smell them. I can still smell the cards, and I can go right back there to 1972. There's another way of looking at it, which is, let's face it, this is a great investment, and I'm going to raise a family on nothing but baseball cards. There's a song there, by the way. At what point did you realize you didn't have to do anything else for a living?
It would have been probably in the middle part of 2002. Actually, the middle part 2002, 2003 range. I set up a kiosk out at the Mall of America, and you'd be surprised how many. I mean, you wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, you're a collector yourself. So many people came up and said they had cards, etc. But at that point, then I met a person, and I had the base. I was registered with my company, BaseballCardBuyer.com Inc. But he taught me a lot about. He was actually one of the leaders in the field, Tim, of web search optimization. So basically, I mean, I have a couple actually that one site, but I have another 5 sites, and I get about 1,000 people at least to my different sites every day. So my advertising, you know, that I invested that way, and that pays off.
I bet you had a few people come up to your kiosk and say, I found these in the basement, must have been my grandson's or something, just want to get rid of them. And you got them for about $12, and they're probably worth $12,000.
No, actually, I don't do that.
Oh. All right. Well, can I keep you over the break here? I got one more question for you.
No problem, Tim.
All right, hang on. That's Bob. I'm Tim. We'll be back.
AM 1500, KSTP.
Let's go! Batter up! We're taking the afternoon off. It's a beautiful day for a ball game.
Welcome back to the old broadcast, Mischke with you. And I've been talking with David Hobson from BaseballCardBuyer.com. Because once again, the Honus Wagner card, that famous T206, has changed hands, and another few million has changed hands as well. I love following this card around the country, maybe around the world. Honus Wagner's card was among the first of hundreds of cards of Major League ball players produced by the American Tobacco Company. And included in packages of cigarettes. Yes, cigarettes. Unlike other players, though, Wagner demanded his card be withdrawn. Now, theories vary as to why. One of them is that he didn't believe American Tobacco paid him enough. Others say, no, he just didn't want baseball associated with tobacco. He didn't want kids to see baseball as connected with something as evil as that weed. He was a non-smoker, Pittsburgh shortstop, arguably the second greatest baseball player of his era, right behind Cobb. He hit .344 during his rookie year. His rookie year was 1897. Wouldn't you have loved to have attended a couple of ball games in 1897? Everybody thinks, let's go back and see the 27 Yanks. Nonsense. Go back to 1897, watch a ball game. One of the first 5 players inducted into the Hall of Fame. Wagner retired in 1917 with more hits, runs, RBIs, doubles, triples, and steals than any other National League player. I wanted to learn more about this baseball card business for quite a while. BaseballCardBuyer.com is run by David Hobson, my guest. David, I've been doing this since 1992, this radio business.
Yeah.
And so this would be my 16th year.
By the way, I called you Tim again. As I said, I'm not a media guy as far as watching much. I apologize, Tom. Go ahead.
All right. I just like screwing around. This is infotainment. We get a little information and have a little entertainment always. So you teach us a little bit about baseball cards, and I sort of play Don Rickles to the masses, and everybody wins then. That's sort of how it works. So that's why I'll go by Tim. Sometimes people call up and say, what's your name? I say Doug, and we roll with that for a while. Because I'll go either way. I've been Mary once or twice, never on the air. Dave, right now you're flying out somewhere, are you, to make another bid on some purchase? Do you got another plan to head out somewhere and possibly blow thousands of dollars on a collection?
Actually, yeah. Well, as I said, I'm heading out to Newport Beach, California, to PSA Professional Sport Authenticators headquarters to drop off a rather large collection I just purchased. I had an offer to go to Florida to buy a collection yesterday, but as I said, got a great child coming hopefully soon, so I just got to stay home base. Home base, there it is.
Home base. Now, when you say authenticators, a lot of guys peddling fake cards, are they?
Yeah, and that's I did say authenticator correct, and there are people that do that, and they won't grade a card that's been doctored, so to speak.
Really? So has anyone ever tried to pass a Honus Wagner fraud card?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean to me, or for sure, yeah. I mean, that happens, yeah. But however, I mean, I've even heard of one person that actually took an older card. They made a copy type thing, and they put brown sugar on it to try to get it past the people at PSA, and they wrote about it and laughed, of course.
Yeah. Have you ever run into a card that's a great old card, wonderful card, valuable card, but it's just beat to hell?
Yeah, the real beat-up stuff. Yeah, that's, you know, yeah, you do, and you kind of say it doesn't have hardly any value. Real quick example.
What?
I've sold the Hank Aaron Rookie in a PSA 3, so graded a 3 on a scale of 1 to 10 for $340. I also sold it in a 9, which is considered mint. Not 10, but a 9 for over $19,000, so conditions everything.
Is this Honus Wagner a 9 or a 10?
It's an 8.
Oh, it's an 8.
Yeah.
Are 10s pretty common out there for cards?
Never, hardly on anything. There's no 10s on a Honus, of course, and on 10s, you rarely see them on any cards in the 60s.
I wouldn't trust a 10 because a 10 means a 10 means no kid ever bought it. No kid ever opened it up and took it home.
Shows my heart. No, not necessarily because they can come. Not necessarily because there were factory sets. You maybe bought some of those a little bit later after, like starting about 74. Mm. You got them in the packs probably as a kid, but they started doing them in sets like in 74. I get your point on that, right, to some extent. But
I was mentioning earlier how many years I've been at this, and there's a reason. I was going to go into a question, and I don't know what happened. We got off track.
No problem.
Never. I've had a lot of guests on, and you are unique in one category, and I want to ask you about it. Never has anybody, just prior to going on the show, said to my producer just before going on, by the way, tell them not to take the name of the Lord in vain. Is that something you just generally do with all talk hosts, or were you specifically doing that with
actually,
me?
I'd given a talk on CFRB, which is a Canadian radio station, asked to give a talk, and I'm actually, as I said, a journalist, so I talk about some other issues, a really big issue that someday maybe we could talk about, and I have a website on that, too.
Right, but I mean, have you been on other shows? What I'm trying to figure out is, am I the only one you've ever said that to before going on the air? Or
Yeah. I don't know much about your situation as far as what you talk about on the radio. So you got to be a little careful. Obviously, there's nothing more sacred than our blessed Lord's name.
So you were just making sure, you were probably thinking back to shock jocks and morning shows and saying, boy, language gets a little salty. I better clear this up ahead of time.
Exactly. And I mean, a lot of things are going on. I told your producer I'm a Roman Catholic, and a very interesting thing. I don't mean to throw a pitch real quick, but there's a very interesting story. It'll blow your mind if I give you a website address,
sure,
a very
sure.
clean, great website.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, all right, great. It's real quickly, www.pope.com. In red, popeinred.com. It's actually the story of the century, and I'm working with the key individual priest who actually was the person who discovered what's been going on in society and the structures, what professed to be the so-called Catholic Church. I'm a strict Roman Catholic, love the faith, but there's a usurpation of the papacy in 1950 at the conclave. This is a very major story. It's getting national press now. Because of the warlords that run the press are not being able to stop some of this. So it's a very sincere thing with documentation where there was a true pope elected in 1958, Cardinal Giuseppe Siri of Genoa, Italy, and he was usurped within the conclave from the fifth column enemies of the church. This is what has happened and has caused the apostasy and the discord which is in society today.
So in other words, you're talking everything post-Vatican II is a sham.
As far as what they're professing out of there, yes. There's been over 40 antipopes in the history of the church, And so obviously there's historical precedent. This has happened again. The Pope actually chose the name Gregorius the 17th and was put under duress. He was, in a sense, rescued finally by a priest by the name of Father Quatron. He's worked with the bigs of bigs, and actually then a plan was made to continue the papacy. This is not any type of a joke type thing. It's called PopeInRed.com. My website's on that. You know, it's a big time. It's a big type thing. So
right,
that's why I gave the interview before. And, yeah. I don't know your venue, but I it sounds like you got a good heart.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Did they kill the guy in 58?
Actually, in 58, Cardinal Giuseppe Siri, by the name of Pope Gregory XVII, no, they did not. They kept him under duress and in hostage. And he did relate this when Father Quat met with him at the Instituto Rovasco in Rome on June 14th, 1988.
Well, what about
the enemy lines? Hello?
So the other cardinals went along with this. It was a conspiracy.
Publicly, he was betrayed. This is true. This is true. And actually, Mel Gibson does own the rights to this story.
I bet he does.
He does. It's a fact. I know that.
Okay.
I've spoken with his father about that.
His dad.
Hutton Gibson.
Yeah. Now, is it true his dad doesn't believe in the Holocaust?
That is true.
But otherwise, he's
the understanding on that is that's a real deep issue, of course.
Do you think it happened?
I do not. In the way it's portrayed. And if you realize, and real quickly, because what happens is the people are controlled by the media to think that now I'm an anti-Semite. In reality, if you do the research on it, the good historians, they'll see that Hitler was, in part for sure, the Balfour Decree was funded by the Talmudics. And the upper echelon Zionists, they needed to get their people down to that area that was not theirs, and they did it any way they could. There's historical precedent. That's a real deep issue.
How many guys who do what you do for a living, trade baseball cards and talk about baseball cards. How many guys into that are also into this other subject matter?
I hope more, but, you know, it's I don't know very
many. You think it's about 50-50?
Of course. You know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. I bet the baseball card thing, though, is a great diversion from this other stuff because the other stuff sounds stressful to think about and worrisome and makes you wonder who you can trust out there, whereas baseball cards just make you want to have a hot dog and look out at the blue sky or something.
You know, actually, you know, you got to keep it all together on all levels, you know, and, you know, it's a neat thing and, you know, it's a real blessing.
Okay. Well, back to baseball cards. What's the most valuable card you have there, Dave?
I sell them quite, you know, pretty quickly. Right now, I just got a great collection. I picked up 5 Babe Ruths in it, and there's probably one that will grade about, you know, it'll probably go for about $5,000. That's a nice card that I have on me right now, but as I said, I sell a lot of cards.
Now we're going to dovetail back into the Holocaust and then quickly back to baseball. Hang on, it's going to be quick. No, I'm not going to do that to you. Well, I appreciate your time. Baseballcardbuyer.com is the website. Dave Hobson is the man. If you guys want to get rid of some, he'll take them off your hands. If you want to find out their value, he'll help you with that. So good luck to you, sir, and I'll be pursuing this other stuff. It sounds doggone fascinating. I was raised a Roman Catholic myself.
That's right. But you profess the faith.
Because I always liked the post-Vatican II stuff, though, because I could understand what was going on.
Well,
you know,
actually modernism. When you see, like, Antipope John Paul II kissing the crayon, no pope could do that.
Yeah, that Pope John Paul seemed like a good guy.
He was just the opposite. Stay a little. We'll talk more about that sometime, hopefully.
Okay, I'll bring out some cards. We'll talk about it.
Thanks, Tom.
Right, bye-bye.